Yes, the good news seems to be for our children, our families, and maybe for the future of Klal Yisrael, that this group seems to have very focused interest in their children, future generations. And a lot of the interest in the power of Bitochen seems has been, and we would like it to be focused on what we could do for our children and the next generation. So I thought maybe today we would discuss an issue which is both philosophical and practical. And that is, how can we, if we can, impact our children, grandchildren, others, with the power of our own bitochen? Because we know that when we're dealing with others, we're dealing with free choice. Everybody has free choice. Every child is really free to say, hey, bye, I'm going off the derech. You know, it's a freedom that we all have. I don't know if it's an inalienable right that's granted to us but that's what Bechira means. We're free to do, we're free to choose. And therefore, it becomes the question of what can we do to prevent that? Everybody has free choice. There must be. We just sense that there's something to do about it. There's a beautiful story that must have happened early, late 40s or early 1950s in Bnei Brak, when the Ponovich Yeshiva had been established. I'm sure it wasn't the citadel that it is today, the city that it is today, but the Ponovich Rov established a yeshiva. And all of a sudden, in walked two Shomer HaTzair kibbutznikim. They looked the role, they talked the role, they acted the role. You know, guys, no sheiches, no. I mean, that's like as far away from Yiddishkeit as you could get in those days. And they went, we want to learn Torah. Even the giant, the Ponovich Rov, was like shocked. He didn't know what to do. How do you deal with such a situation? Like, what's this all about? This was before the existence of a tshuva movement, you know, where it's become a, I'll never forget, I once sat in the home of Reb Shmuel Aaron Yudalevich. He was the oldest son-in-law of Reb Aryeh Levin. He was a goyin olam and a tzaddik yesod olam. And we were talking, and he mentioned something like, yeah, this must have been 1969. 1970, the latest. He says, yeah, he says, there's Balei Tshuva, like some kind of a freak that he never saw before, you know, like the concept was just new. In those days, there was no such thing. There were people running the other way, but Balei Tshuva, coming back, like I saw from the spilus that he had, that this was, you know, a foreign thing to those that were part of that society. And it was, anyway, so these guys came, they didn't know what to do. So the Ponovich Rov went to the Chazon Ish, who was in Bnei Brak, and he asked him, what is this all about? Like the phenomenon, the confusion of what to do, and the mystique of how does such a thing happen? Like, it was just like, so he says, these people had grandparents or great-grandparents. Some was grandparents. And before the war, and they saw what was coming, and they were mispallel to the Rabbeinu Shalalem that their children should be saved and should continue in the Derech HaTorah and this. And the tefillahs were not accepted. But tefillahs are not lost. And those tefillahs, those tears that their grandparents or maybe their great-grandparents shed for their children and their descendants finally came to play in the lives of these two kids, and they came to the yeshiva, and they became yeshivalite. So, you know, we know that our tefillahs never go wasted. And here we see clearly that the tefillahs did influence the lives of these two young men. They came from, I mean, they came from less than nowhere, further away from the nowhere that you could possibly get. And they came to learn Panovish and Bnei Brak. So we know our tefillahs are not wasted. But how does it work, and what can we do on many different levels to assure the future of our children and our grandchildren? And grandchildren is a very big nisoyan, because children, there's a little more than you can, there's a little more that you can do about it. You know, we get our act together, and we learn how to control our anger, and how to negotiate. And many parents don't like to hear the word about negotiating with their children, but that's what you have to do. And we learn to be non-judgmental. Many parents don't like that either. And you know, so there's what we could do for our children. Grandchildren are much harder, because grandchildren, there's a limit to what you can do. There's a limit to the amount of exposure that you have. There's a limit to the amount that your children or your children-in-law will allow you to do. You know, like you have to know your place as a grandparent. You know, so it's a little bit harder in terms of the direct sense of influence. On the other hand, sometimes there are opportunities, because when the parents don't get along with the kids, sometimes they come running to the grandparents, so there are opportunities. It's, you know, it's complex. So let's talk about some practical things that we can do. Now, we cannot directly deprive a person of their Bechira Chofshis. It doesn't work that way. Kodesh Baruch Hu assured each person of the right and the ability to make a free will decision. Otherwise, there'd be no reward for anything in this world. Otherwise, we would not be able to earn anything, because we would be, in a sense, programmed, pre-programmed, programmed by somebody else. Can't be. We, in order to earn the ultimate chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us, both in this world and beyond, we have to have that inalienable right of free choice. On the other hand, that does not mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has relinquished his control over the world. The one thing, HaKol Bidei Shomayim Chutz MiYira Shomayim. But Yira Shomayim really means the internal decision. V'horaya, I want to make a bracha on an esrog, but there's no esrog. So that's not Bidei Odom. HaKol Bidei Shomayim Chutz MiYira Shomayim. The Yira Shomayim is, I want to make the brocha on the esrog. But it's Bidei Shomayim whether I'll have an esrog or not. There were times when they couldn't find an esrog, when they couldn't find a kosher esrog. When I get this most expensive, beautiful esrog, right before I make the brocha, it falls on the floor, and it's possible. So that is, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu reserves his ways of helping and interfering in the Yira Shomayim decision that we make. But the ultimate decision, that's ours. But even before we get there, let's talk for a bit about what we can do on a practical level. And I think that is as follows. I think I've mentioned here in this forum that although the Ramban and others say that Kol HaBoiteach Ma'amin V'Lav Kol HaMa'amin Boiteach, everyone who puts trust in Hashem must believe in Hashem, because if you don't believe in Him, there's no one to trust. And there's nothing to trust. And there's no reason to trust, because you know, you have to believe in Him and His all-powerful and His kindness and His caring and His involvement and so forth. But lav kol ha-ma'amin b'iteach. But everyone who believes in Hashem and in His powers and in His chesed and everything else is not necessarily trusting Him to deliver on something, because Hashem agorem achet. Maybe I'm not deserving. Therefore, maybe I'm not entitled to it. Therefore, maybe He's not going to give it to me, because there is mishpat in the world too. So therefore, you must have emunat habitochen. I would like to suggest that that's of course true. Cholila, nobody could dispute that. But on the other hand, bitochen even to the one who is shaky or even claiming to be a non-ma'amin. I never really met a real non-ma'amin, but that's besides the point. But even to the one who's claiming not to believe, but bitochen is an amazing thing for him, because What bituchen really is, the motivation to want to believe. Because we associate belief with the burdens that come with belief. Now, in certain religions, the burdens are not so severe. Fine. By Klal Yisrael, the burdens are heavy. 613 of them before you even get started. So, because of that, we sometimes feel the burden is overwhelming, and it reduces the motivation to want to believe. It confuses the intellectual thoughts of belief, and it blinds me sometimes, and I just, let me out of here. I can't handle the pressure, it's getting too hot. The one who can be inspired to the existence of bituchen, wow, bituchen is the reason that I want to believe. Because I now know that there are two massive, earth-shattering benefits of the one who believes. Because if the one who believes can then put his trust in the one in whom he believes, then I now have the ability to achieve things that I want in this world. And I have the ability to have peace of mind, menuchas hanefesh, knowing that Hashem has everything under control. And he delivers, and it's his problem, and he takes care of me. So the greatest selling point, the greatest marketing point for Emuna is bituchen. Because bituchen speaks about the benefits of Emuna without emphasizing the burdens. To take it to a further extent, Chazal tell us, and we've mentioned this, Rabbi Machoivim L'Rosho V'Abitech B'Hashem Chesed Yisrei V'Venu. Many are the pains that a Rosha will suffer, but one who puts his trust in Hashem will be surrounded by Chesed. And Chazal of Yalkut Shemayni brings it, Afilu Rosha Ubeitech B'Hashem Chesed Yisrei V'Venu. Even if he's a Rosha, he has trust in Hashem. So this bituchen says, I don't even have to be a tzaddik. I don't have to be burdened with all of those burdens that have made me want to question that emunah in the first place. And if I have bituchen, I can get the things I want in life. I can have the menuchas hanefesh. And it isn't even dependent upon all the burdens. Of course, as parents, we should know, anyone who reaches a level of bituchen and begins to see some of the responses and some of the effects, both in the benefits that come and in the menuchas hanefesh, the tariag mitzvahs becomes a piece of cake. The tariag mitzvahs now become less burden and more privilege, because I have this connection and I want this connection. I appreciate this connection. And therefore, I want to do more and more of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, because not only do I now believe in Him, but I have this ongoing relationship and this active sense of trust. And in reality, mitzvahs are an outgrowth of bituchen, just as bituchen can be an outgrowth of mitzvahs. What do I mean? You know what mitzvahs really are? They're really an expression of bituchen. These days it's a little easier, but why do I not go to the marketplace on Shabbos when that's the biggest market day and I'm losing half my parnosa for that week? Why? Because I trust Hashem will take care of me. He told me not to do it. I trust Him. Why do I go dafka to this butcher store where they charge four times, I don't know what they charge, four times, three times, two times more, I don't know, whatever it is. Why can't I go buy the cheap meat for $1.75 a chicken or whatever it costs? Because I trust Hashem that this is the way it should be. And so forth and so on. Why do I dafka send my kids here? Why do I dafka do this? And why do I... That's all trust. So the mitzvah, the trust is established, once that relationship is established, it transforms the burdens of mitzvahs into privileges, into acts of trust, into part and parcel of that system of trusting relationship that I have with Him. So, that having been said, I believe that one of the ways to impact our children is to teach them, and I would say not to preach, but to show, but to live, but for them to sense a life of bituchen in the lives of the parents. When they see that bituchen, and seeing bituchen means seeing it in action, seeing us working on developing it, seeing us attempting to achieve it, seeing us inspiring ourselves to reach higher levels of it, the process, even if they don't see the end result, even if we don't achieve the end result, and who really achieves the ultimate end result, But just the process is so beautiful, is so meaningful, is so inspiring. And of course, the process of seeing Bitochen in our lives introduces them to Hashgacha Pratis, because so the Bitochen is, the response to Bitochen is the Hashgacha Pratis, introduces them to Tefillah, because Tefillah is to inspire Bitochen, and Tefillah is another dimension of that relationship with Hashem, so that so much can happen just by introducing and living a life of Bitochen in our homes. Now, what are some of the outward manifestations that our children can notice? Well, one is when you're very nervous about everything, you certainly sent a message that you have no clue about Bitochen. And the worst case scenario is when you preach the Bitochen, and then the minute that anything goes a little bit, then you get so nervous, you get all bent out of shape, you're having a nervous breakdown, you're screaming, you're yelling, you're pulling your hair out of your head, you're out of it. But one who can live a life of Menuchas HaNefesh, one who can model that Bitochen in reality, with a peace of mind, with a confidence in the future, with a lack of nervousness and anxiety and in fact, you know, we once defined here, Rashi says the definition of Vishavtem lo vetach is Shaloi Tiragu, the absence of worry. If we in our homes we institute a sense of an absence of worry, we don't worry, we do. We gotta do a lot of things sometimes. We don't worry, because we know it's in the hand of Hashem. And when we say those words, we mean it. And they sense that we mean it because they see the peace of mind and they see that sense of confidence that, you know, things are going to work out. So this is a very powerful...
At what age are they able to put those two things together?
At the very youngest ages. I think that little kids... I have a theory that little kids are on a higher level than we are. It's just they get messed up in the middle someplace. And they, when you tell a little kid something, you tell him what happened at Har Sinai, that's a reality. You tell him what happened in Mitzrayim, that's a reality. You tell him what Hashem does, Hashgacha Pratis, that's a reality. He doesn't have any doubts, he doesn't have any questions, it's real. So I think, you know, and anxiety, they say the baby can sense in the mother's milk. They say the baby can sense in the mother's womb, let alone in the mother's milk. So anxiety is something, when there's peace of mind, there's a certain tranquility which will pass on to them almost like naturally, without even, not even intellectually, just emotionally. This is a calm, this is a tranquil house. One of the Goyin says it's not the pshat. I think we may have discussed it at one point. But one of the Rishonim say, the Goyin proves that it's not the pshat. But the one somebody does say, Bituach ani shein se bituach beisi, that doesn't mean I'm batuach, that the fire is not burning my house. Batuach ani that the tzvocho, that the screaming. In my house, they don't scream. If there would be a fire in my house, nobody would be screaming. That's also a form of bitochen. It's not the same form of that confident that it's going to happen or confident that it's not happening, but it's also a... So anyway, so this is one benefit that they certainly... Bitochen makes the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu a reality. Now, we have to be really confident in this Bitochen thing. There are many people who are afraid to ask children to daven, to pray for something, because they're too focused on the fact that it may not be answered. Now, sometimes they're not answered immediately. You know, I like to say, the answer is never no. It may be not now. The answer is never no. The answer to the tefillos of these great-grandparents or grandparents of the two Shomer HaTzair kibbutznikim was that two generations later they're going to come to learn in Ponovich. That was the answer to that tefillah. And it says so. Some of the Pele Yoyes, I think, says sometimes the tefillos can't be answered immediately. Sometimes they can't be answered for us. It'll be answered for our children. The answer for our grandchildren. Answer. So, but we have to have that confidence in tefillah and certainly in bitochen. And if we don't have the confidence, then we can't convey that message. And when we lecture without truly subscribing to what we're lecturing, it sounds hollow and empty, especially to kids. Kids are very sharp. And it's not intellectual. There's an intuitive sense of reality. And, you know, so anyway, but this is something we have to work on, and we should work on with them. I'll never forget that some of our fondest moments, I never talk about these things, but this is almost not public, even though I don't know what they do with this tape. But we spent some years in the San Fernando Valley where, you know, I could tell you stories. Phew, we didn't have money. It was like, you know, I told one story here. I didn't even have 75 cents to give my kid to buy a soda. But Motzoi Shabbos, we would make a Malava Malka. The whole family. We would sing Ish Chosid Hoyo and all of these mirais that have to do with since Al Tiro Avdi Yaakov. And the Kim Yisodeinu Brocho Bimoideinu Meitzoyo Menucho Hamsel Amcho Revocho. And it's such a chizuk working together that it's not that I have and I want to inspire you. We're all on a table. We used to drive in the car. I remember the kids sitting in the station wagon, and we would play tapes, songs, all of Bitochen. I'll never forget. There was a Chassidish version and a non-Chassidish version, two different tapes. And they used to sing that. To this day, the kids remember that. In fact, a few weeks ago, we were in L.A., and my daughter had a girl, it was named after my wife, and we made a Malava Malkum at Soy Shabbos, so we went, you know, like the good old day with grandchildren around, it was a different, but that was the Chizuk. So even if we're not on the level, but just seeing that we're working on it means we take it seriously. And the benefit is we gain, and sometimes the benefit is that they gain even more than we gain. So either way, that's one aspect. Okay, so I think it's very important to inspire them in that area in whatever way we can. And the truth of the matter is, what I have found, that on the flip side, people who have gone off the derech, people who are have never were on the derech, never knew anything, don't believe anything, bitochen, it does wonders. It turns everybody on. It's the most exciting. See, the genius of bitochen and tefillah from a hashpoah point of view is that it speaks to my material and physical desires in the most spiritual of contexts. In other words, that's why I say the genius of tefillah is that the tefillah was mesuder to give us the physical needs that we have. So it's not just my spirit soars, my neshama wants to connect to Hashem, and my body is craving for other things. My body's on board with the tefillah because I'm asking for refuah, and I'm asking for parnosa, I'm asking for this, I'm asking things I want. So, you know, it's like it's a system that takes the totality of the human being, and bitochen does that in a superior way. So whether a person's religious or not, I'll tell you how many people we brought back. Even people who are not doing so well emotionally, I call it bitochen therapy. Really just to, you know, it takes care of a lot of the guilt that they have, it takes care of a lot of the other things that plague them. So this is a very, you know, we have to, working on this together with our families, together with others, and inspiring them as much as possible in this, can have long-term and dramatic effects. Okay, that's one aspect. Now, let's talk about something else. There's a famous Or HaChaim HaKodesh, which I believe is misunderstood. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but I'll put it on the table and see what you think about it. The Or HaChaim, where Reuven comes and tells his brothers that rather than killing Yosef, they should put him in the bor. And the Or HaChaim says he wanted him to be subject to the danger of the snakes and the scorpions that were there, rather than the Bale Bechira that the brothers were. He says, because the Bale Bechira could harm him, even though the snakes were like pre-programmed from whatever was decided on Yom Kippur, they will enact that, but there's nothing they could do. But the Bale Bechira could get him, even though he wasn't, I don't remember the Lashon exactly, but that's the idea about the Bechira, could have, since I have Bechira, I have a power to do, even if it wasn't so decreed from before. Seems very bizarre, very strange. So what I think you have to do to understand this, Or HaChaim, is to realize that there is a concept. I like to call it an interim mishpat, an interim din Torah. What do I mean? We're judged on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's a tremendous chesed. One chesed is that Hashem doesn't leave it to the end of our lives, because there'll be so much we wouldn't be able to handle it to do tshuva. Another chesed is it doesn't do it every day, because it would be too much. Gives us a month preparation, gives us Rosh Hashanah, gives us the shofar, gives us a dirshu Hashem v'himotzo, a special time, misuvah for tshuva, and Yom Kippur, and we start, and then the day, and finally at the end, the last hours of Yom Kippur, and he gives us even beyond that Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, till he gives the reshus to the shluchim to act, and Shmini Atzeres, till he gives up the petek on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, then he gives them reshus on Shmini Atzeres. It's like it's a system where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bending over backwards double and triple times in order to help us to be zeiche in the din. Fine. But there's a din on Yom Kippur. That's the best situation. Now, there is such a thing as an interim judgment. For example, it says the sotan is mekatrig b'mokum sakona. When a person goes in a mokum sakona, the sotan is mekatrig. Okay? Now, what is the sotan mekatrig? I don't understand. So what? Like, am I supposed to, what happened on Yom Kippur happened. If I was supposed to live, I live. And if not, not once. And there are other things. There's Ayin Hora creates a certain koyach. There are a few other things like that too. There's, it slips my mind right now. One of those things is, it seems from the Orach Chaim, the Baal Bechira. The Baal Bechira is like a Mokum Sakona. What does a Mokum Sakona do? It invokes an interim din Torah. That means like this. Until now, here we are, Shvat, the beginning of Shvat, and we have till Yom Kippur, till we have to really get our act together. The Gzeirah from last year is good until next year. Something has certain excuses. Oh, you think it's such a big deal, you're walking among Sakona, you're not afraid. Or there are other situations, like Ayin Hora, somebody's jealous of you, so the sultan is makatrig, you know, that's the kitrig, he said, jealous, look, it makes me jealous. So what happens is, the sultan says, let's invoke a new din Torah. Now, what does that do? That does not give a person something that he doesn't deserve, but that gives him a judgment from Yom Kippur until Rosh Chodesh Shvat, until today, which means that if I'm not guilty, nothing's going to happen. But I potentially could become guilty for something that I wasn't going to be guilty for, because the judgment would not be until Yom Kippur, and then I would have a chance to do tshuva. So that's the idea. I believe that's the idea of Orach Chaim too. A Baal Bechira creates like his own Mokum Sakona. And when a Baal Bechira, since a Baal Bechira has a right to shoot, he has that right, that it's his Bechira. Of course, the only Bechira is the decision to shoot. But since he has that right, so he creates a matzav where now, oh, there's a shooting that's going on over here. Something's happening here. So the sultan says, oh, let's make a din Torah. Now this is not the fault of the person, because certainly Yosef didn't go in there voluntarily, or didn't face the brothers, the trouble from the brothers voluntarily. You know, they pushed whatever they were attacking him, but Lamaisa, there's now a Mokum Sakona, there's now a new Din Torah, and a person could lose what he otherwise wouldn't lose if he had until Yom Kippur. But Cholila to say that a person is going to be judged and receive something that he didn't earn. That would be Lo Yagur Choro and HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'mechitzos Yishol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no Avla. Kel Emuna Ve'ein Ovel. No avla, everything is justice. Tzur tomim polo ki kol droch of mishpot keel emuna vein ovel tzadik v'yoshuru. So memele, that's the idea. So it seems, therefore, that we can do things to get around this. Why? Because even though the person has bechira, but we do have the ability to forestall or create circumstances which can limit that Bechira. And if we could create such circumstances, like Reuven wanted to do, just by taking him out of their direct shot, we too can turn to Hashem with tefillah and say, hey, provide the inspiration. provide the happenings, provide the occurrences. For example, a story that I've told here about a young man in this community who was really not doing too well spiritually, but when in his local high school they had a contest for the best story of Hashgacha Pratis, and he came in with a story that happened during the Holocaust and how his father and his uncles and his grandparents had miraculously saved. They mamish believe to this day that Elio Anovi sat down next to them on the train and showed his papers and they were able to get through, and this changed his life. So here's a person who had Bechira to go off the derech, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this guy in Lakewood come up with this idea to give $100 for the best story of Hashgacha Pratis. Made this principal over here decide to do it even though the guy in Lakewood was not providing the money, so he had to provide the money. Made this whole contest, got this guy decided of $100 he wants to get involved. He went home, he happened to hear this story, changed his life. So we can have influence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu can certainly, and we then again are back in the ball game. Because our tefillas and our bitochen can have influence. Not only that, there's another angle of the influence too. And this is a very, I think this point alone is very, it's a little philosophical, but it's very important to appreciate that even though the ultimate decision, see again, Hakol b'idei Shemayim chutz mi'yirat Shemayim just means I decide to want to do or not to want to do. But the implementation is also b'idei Shemayim. Because I want to take an esrog, I can't find one. I want to eat chazer, I can't find any in the five towns. What can I do? You know, I hope. You know, so I want, but I just so, you know, and eventually, and then this positive influence. All of a sudden, somebody is going, wow, he's running as fast as he can run, and he meets somebody along the way who says two words to him. And all of a sudden, everything changes. He starts to think, sees a different perspective. How many people ran far off the derech and they meet a girl? She was, and she's running back. And all of a sudden, he decides to run together with her. And they both run back. And by the time they get to the chuppah, I saw some simcha, the smile on the faces of both of their families. You know, so all of these things are still within the power of our tefillah, within the power of our bitochen, and certainly within the power of our Kodesh Baruch Hu to make these things happen. Then there's something else too. I mentioned the pasuk before, tzaddik, keil emuna, the ein ovel. What does it mean, ein ovel? Ein ovel means like this. Let's say that a person, the simplest story is a story that somebody else once made up. You got this guy who every Thursday he helps this little old lady up to the third floor with her packages. You know, he lives in the house there and he helps her up every time, and she counts on him. She can't possibly come back from the market and carry all the packages, and he helps her. One day, he has to go away, whatever it is. He was arrested. I don't know what. He did something wrong. He was taken to prison. She said, okay, it's mishpat, right? Keil emuna. But why does the poor lady have to suffer now? Nobody else is going to schlep her packages. In human terms, there's nothing we can do about that. We can't guarantee that when we do one thing that it's not going to have negative impact down the line someplace else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is keil emuna, the ein ovel. There'll be no ovel in everything that he does. Even though al piteva, this act should have a negative impact on someone else, it won't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls that. Memela, so here, like this. My kid is distancing himself, but I'm suffering. How does that work? Well, he can't inflict suffering on me unless I'm supposed to. So that means I could, if I'm not supposed to, or if I change my person, my madrega, and I become the person that's not supposed to, I do tshuva, I be mispala, I elevate myself, I have more bitochen, then I can influence that which is going to happen to me. Well, then, one thing, I'm going to be okay. Well, if I'm going to be okay, then sometimes that can trickle back and filter back and say, hey, you know something? You, before when this whole ordeal started, you really deserved a little slap in the face also. No longer. That might be enough of a schus to turn somebody else around to. Because we do know that we can generate schusim for other people. We know that from many sources, but I want to bring you a very simple source. We say tilim. A person is sick, we say tilim. Most of what we say has no shaychus to asking Hashem for help. Yachel Yisrael el Hashem. For who yiftes Yisrael mekol amei Yosef. Esto eina ele horim. Meyayin yovo ezri. Ezoakti elecho Hashem amati atomachsi. These are things that HaMelech said. These are inspirations to be tochen. These are not requests. Minimal. Very few in all the Sefer Tilim. There are some, but very few of direct requests. So what's the pshat? What am I doing? The teretz is, when I say the tilim, I'm inspiring myself in bitochen. And then that bitochen, I make a mishaberach or whatever, I say, that bitochen should be a schus. The inspiration to bitochen should be a schus that for these, for whatever the situation is. I even have a shayla, I have to ask somebody someday. I'm very nervous about the mishaberach, because we say bavur she. We don't do with stalker like sometimes by the shul by the sefer Torah we say bavur she, so we say bavur she bnei yeshiv mispaladim bavurom. So I said that you're really not supposed to say, because that's called iyun tefila. The Gemara says one who says he should be answered because I davened well, then I go, oh, let's see if you're really worthy. The sotan, that's another thing. The sotan is makatri. So I wonder if we're not supposed to add. I don't know. I never saw it anyplace. Bavur, the hischaskus that we have in bitochen through this tefillah, because that's the schus really that's going to work for them. So I don't know. No, don't go changing the mishaberachs yet. But lamaisa, this that. So there's so much that we can do in that area too. So we can have direct influence, because in the schus of our bitochen can change someone else's situation as well. So here we have, when it comes to our children, we have two things. Number one, I want to relieve myself of pain. And kol zman that my child is going to be doing things he shouldn't be doing, I'm going to be in pain. There's no question about that. We definitely have more pain from our children who do things wrong than from ourselves who do things wrong. But let's not go into that right now. But definitely, we manage to handle it when we do things wrong. But the kid, well, that's... I can't, you know, we don't have a Yetzer Hara for ourselves, for our children. We only have for ourselves. So the pain that I have, and then the influence that I could have through the schus of my bitochen to influence what is going on in his life, and mamela, I can make a major difference. Now, there's a third thing I just want to mention before we...
That pain that you might be getting from your child doing things that maybe he shouldn't be doing, that pain could really be coming from something else, just because you believe things that are not necessarily correlated with one another.
What do you mean?
Meaning you might be having pain because of something else you've done, not because of...
Yeah, so, but we
so
also have
changing
pain.
Changing the way... You trying to have your betachon and therefore getting your child to change and therefore you not having that pain... That pain might have been coming because...
Yeah, there's definitely a certain measure of pain that we have. We see our kids doing something wrong. It haunts us. It haunts us. Because we don't have a Yetzer Hara for our children. We want them to be pure and perfect. So even if there are other things, but this, I'm sure this is also a component. All right, but that, be that as it may, that may be. But I just wanted this one other thing too. Let's say, Cholila, that... A person is, you know, flirting with or drifting on or going off the way that they should be going. There's another koyach that exists in the world, and that's the koyach of tshuva. And we really have to focus on that, we can ask davening to Hashem and even trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He will arrange the circumstances that will inspire them to come back. So even when they're going, even if they're gone, in fact, one of the, this is on a very different level, psychological level, but one of the pieces of advice that I give to people who have children who've drifted is look at them and deal with them as if they're still Anshei Shlomeinu. They're still part of us. Ad kedei kach, I tell them, I say, if you want to get advice as to how to protect your younger siblings from their negative influence, ask them. And what that does is not only do they have the best advice, because they know what they experienced, But that sends the message that you're still one of us. You really want to be. You don't want the kids to do what you're doing. You're caught up now. You're gone. You're going through a phase, a stage, whatever it may be. And when we look at them that way, it has a hashpah. And many, many people have been brought back just by the fact that we refuse to look at them as if they're michutz lamachana, which is a very good piece of advice. But anyway, but
it certainly has a lot to do with your whole reasoning that you can't throw them out of the house.
I mean, oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, oh. I mean, that has many other things, too. 100%. They have to be, you consider them, and it works. And amazing things happen like that. But anyway, but another thing, we push it. People can do tshuva. We ask Hashem to help us, to help them, and to help us to help them, and to do tshuva. So that's another option that we have. And bitochon works there, too. I know, Rabbeinu Shalom, you're not going to let me down. I know you're going to provide the inspiration. He has the bechira, but you're going to provide the inspiration that's going to make him. And the truth of the matter is, there's a very beautiful tefillah. I don't know if you ever noticed it. It's printed in some of the Sidurim, in Shemaya Tefillah, from, I believe, the Chazon Ish wrote it, so I don't think it's an older one. But, Yerotzen Lefonecho, Sheterachem Al Bonai, what? Yeah. Now that clearly states that we can't have an influence. Our tefillas, and we know tefillah inspires bitochen, and therefore our tefillas and our bitochen can really speak. Plant in their heart the love of Hashem. In other words, they have the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. They have a chol levovcho b'shnei yetzarecha. But if you plant that, the good part, and make that plant blossom and flourish and overflow a little bit, then, because there's a melchemes hayetzer, that the melchoma is there. It's always there. So help them with that. In fact, the truth of the matter is that it's interesting. It says, b'chol yom v'yom yitzra shalom miskaber alov. That really Yetzer Hara wins all the time. He's pre-programmed to win, if not for the fact that Hashem helps. It's so beautiful that even in the one thing that we have, Bechira Chofshis, we still need to rely on Hashem. He helps us, but He's guaranteed to help us. If we fight the battle, He will help us. But otherwise, Yetzer Hara would win. So we ask Hashem on them, you know, to inspire the heart so that the battle should be there. Remove the interference, because that's what it is. There are blinders. It's not nobody doesn't believe and nobody doesn't want, but there are blinders that confuse them. Remove the blinders and create the circumstances that should lead them in the right direction. So we see that we can certainly have a definite positive hashpah. We turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us in that. And there's Hashem. But I'd like to leave with one additional thought. How our children can help us. The last nevuah in Tanakh, Malachi. Hinei anochi shaleach chemesei liyohan novi, lifnei bo yoyim Hashem agolu v'anoiro, v'heishiv leivoveis al bonim, v'leivbonim al avoison. Says Rashi, v'heishiv leivoveis la kodesh boruchu. Eliyahu, or through Eliyahu, in Eliyahu's times, let's say, He'll return the levavos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al bonim, al yedei bonim. Children, in the end of days, in the tkufa of the Eliyahu Hanavi, which hopefully we're in, there are certainly all the signs in place, the children will bring their parents back. The heishiv levavos al bonim, levavos l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, al bonim, al yedei bonim. Agav, I add to this my own little nevuah. It's just from experience that what the kids don't accomplish, the grandchildren can accomplish. You see so many situations like that. The kids brought the parents a little bit back, and the grandchildren, they take it all away, you know. So anyway, but I someone told me just a story just this week, last week, I guess. A parent of whatever it is, somebody in California that used to be a student of ours many years ago, the children, And this woman tells me that when she got married, she was religious and her husband wasn't. Used to work Shabbos. My dad, I remember a lot of families like that. The woman would sit home a whole day in the dark, and the husband would be out working. You know, it was a rough world. We're very spoiled today. You know, we don't realize what it used to look like. Anyway, so she says she wasn't religious. She was religious. She kept Shabbos, and her husband didn't. But of course, they sent their kid to the day school. The kid comes home at pre-1A, and all of a sudden he asks his father. He says, "Why do you work on Shabbos?" Because he just learned the song, Yom Rishon Avoda, Yom Sheni, and then Yom Shabbat Menucha. And he asked his father, like, the father made up his mind at that moment that he's not going to work anymore, Shabbos. And gradually, you know, he stopped working, he became religious. When I knew them, they were already both religious. I never knew this until last week, that this father wasn't originally religious. The children have that hashpah too. So it's a two-way street. Not only can we do much to influence our children, but the truth of the matter is our children do a lot to influence us. And there are sometimes the little kid says innocent things that all of us, you know, why'd you say that Lashon Hara? Why did you, they could put us on our best behavior too. So it works both ways. Taka should be zeicha. We should lead them in the right direction, and they should also help us to improve as well.